Okay, so we're beginning the Shir on our Arachayim Parshas Vayetze. I want to begin with an Arachayim that's on page Kuf Mem Zayin on in Perek Chof Ches Pasuk Yudbeis. And again, the discussion at the very beginning of the Seder, of course, is Yaakov Avinu and Beisel and the Chalom and the dream. So the Pasuk in Yudbeis says Vayachalom, Yaakov's dream. And behold, Sula Musav Arza, the ladder was placed on the ground, the head of the ladder reached the heavens. And behold, Malachei Elokim Olam V'yardim Bo, angels of God were going up and down on it. And behold, Hashem Nisav Alav Ayomar, God was standing upon him, and he said, Ani Hashem Elokei Avram V'yichov Elokei Yitzchak, I am God. Right, and God goes on to give him the promise that he will give him Eretz Yisrael. The Arachayim comments on the seeming repetition of the words v'hineh, you know, and behold, and behold, and behold. You know, it seems to be a little bit redundant. So comments to the Arachayim as follows, and it's important, you know, it's an important perspective on dreams in general. Tam omro v'hineh, in the bottom right-hand column. Leos shena halom muchla b'skina tzedek. You know, a dream may or may not convey the truth, capital T. Ki chalomos shavim, as a general rule, chalomos tend to be exactly that chalomos, you know, they tend to be, you know, without value. Gam sha'al koponim yeh bohem tevin, came to ma'ar ha'shi'amun. And even when they have some value, so page kuftem zayim at the bottom, right-hand column, even when they have some value, there's always tevin, there's always some straw, some worthless element in the dream, right? That's about the Perek HaRoah and the last Perek of Brachos, which deals with dreams to a large extent. You know, that there's no such thing as a chalom, there's no such thing as a dream that doesn't have some silly or incorrect elements. Because after all, you see, you know, you see the dream in a state of shi'amun. Thank you very much. Thank you. You see the dream in a state of shi'amum, normally translated as boredom, meaning, you know, it's something you're seeing while you're not really conscious, it's something you're seeing at night. And, you know, there's limited stock, you know, that you can really put in a dream. But there are our vihineh. That's why we find the repetition of the word vihineh numerous times in the dream. Pirush ki advar below shi'amum v'dimyono, helakoldavar nigla etzlo mavur ki yom yo'ir. The dream appeared to him in tremendous clarity. It was not a hazy dream, it was not a fuzzy dream, but vihineh, behold, vihineh implied a certain degree of clarity. Sometimes you have a dream and you're not quite clear on what you're seeing even. You know, there's a certain haziness that comes with the dream. Right here, everything was incredibly clear. You know, it was almost as if it was an experience that he was having in the middle of the day. Was that him? So she dictates lomah v'chopratu tzara anyway love v'chalom v'hineh. That's why there's this repetition of the word v'hineh and behold and behold and behold. Gabiriyas ha'sulam amar v'hineh sulam. Gabiriyas ha'malachim amar v'hineh malachim. Gabigilish shina amar v'hineh Hashem. Hakavana v'zeki ha'isu nevuah mamish. You shouldn't think this was just a chalom. This was a nevuah. You know, and the way you could tell it was a nevuah as opposed to a chalom was the clarity with which various things were seen and experienced. It felt as if, you know, the person, you know, Yaakov Avinu was actually seeing these things, you know, as if they were coming during the day. Right? So, it's important not just in terms of Pshat and Chumash, but, you know, the Arachayim is telling us also to be somewhat wary of dreams. You know, if a person is zochet to have a dream with a tremendous degree of, you know, crystal clear clarity, like Yaakov Avinu has, so that's one thing. But most of the time, you know, dreams tend to be, as he writes, chalomos or shavs. You know, most of the time they tend to be not really that significant, and certainly not entirely significant, you know, to the point at which it would be considered like a nevuah. Right. So I told you I mean, again, so the question is, you know, Nevi'im other than Moshe Rabbeinu see things in a way which is not totally clear. I thought the Arachayim means is that you know, any nevuah, there's a certain bar of clarity that you reach. And then Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah was unique in that it had absolute clarity. Right? But even, let's say, the nevuah of a non-Moshe Rabbeinu can't be at 10% clarity. It has to be, let's say, at 80% clarity, 90% clarity. You know, and just the nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is unique, it's 99% clarity. Right? But, you know, to say that it would be totally fuzzy, that's a chalom, you know, and not a nevuah. If I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Yaakov Avinu's, how Yaakov Avinu's nevuah rated in terms of Avraham Yitzchak, this I don't know. This I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so if you hold that, last we come back to something in the Archon, which I think is going to address that. So if it doesn't address it, let me know. But I think it will, in part, at least, address that question. If you just turn over the page to Kuf Mem Ches, the bottom of the right-hand column in Pasuk Yudalid, a little bit into there, the Arachayim gives a beautiful homiletic interpretation of the whole dream. Again, the already in Chazal, the Midrashim, and then later the Rishon will talk about what was the significance of this dream. You know, this ladder which is going up from the the earth to the heavens, the Malachim going up and down on the ladder, right? Various different interpretations as to what that means. The Arachayim on page Kuf Mem Ches, about second paragraph on the right hand column says as follows. Well, the Derek Remez call out Parashat Tirmos Inyan Ha'odom. Now, this is Remez, this is a hint or a homiletic interpretation. It's not Shat, it's not even Drash, but nonetheless, it's a beautiful, beautiful interpretation which, again, has a Chassidish flavor to it. We pointed out in our first shiur that, you know, what seems to have made the Arachayim a particularly popular sefer was the fact that the Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim embraced the Svarim of the Arachayim, you know, even more or less during the Arachayim's lifetime, you know, and the Chassidish Velt really, you know, we quoted from one of the Gedolei HaChassidus, that all of the Yesodos of Chassidus can be traced back to the Svarim of the Arachayim, right? So, you know, here in this next piece we're going to see, this sounds like Chassidish Torah in many, many ways, and you can appreciate, I think, why the Chassidim had such a love for the Arachayim. He has also tshuvas and halachos svarim. I mean, he was a Pesach, you know. We've seen some of his, you know, halachic discourses on the Chumash during our shiurim. You know, so, I mean, he wasn't just writing on Chumash. I mean, he has on other, you know, on halachic portions as well. Well, the Derech Remez call our parashas Tirmos Inyan Ha'adam. This whole story of the dream kind of hints at the task that a person has in this world. He quotes the Zohar. The Zohar says that Yaakov went out in a homiletic sense, refers to the nefesh, to the neshama, that departs from the heavenly realms. The Nikko Yaakov al Shem Yitzhar HaKarach Ba'akevos. Why is the Neshama referred to as Yaakov? Vayetze Yaakov, the Zohar again says that Vayetze Yaakov means the Neshama leaves, begins a Meromen, the Neshama leaves the heavenly abode. Why is the Neshama called Yaakov? Because Yaakov means the heel, and every Neshama has the Yitzhar at its heels,
as it comes into this world. As the neshama descends into this world and comes into a physical body, you know, the Yetzer Hara is in close pursuit. It's on its heels, wrapped around it as it comes into this world. So, Omer Mide'er Sheva, the Pasuk says, Vayetzi Yaakov Mide'er Sheva, which again, homiletically means the neshama, wrapped with the Yetzer Hara, comes down from heaven. Mide'er Sheva, why is Be'er Sheva, you know, used as a reference to heaven? Makom Shimimenu Yetzer HaNeshamos, you call it Be'er Mayim Chayim. Because Be'er means a well, you know, the well springs refer to a place from which the neshamas come. Again, you know, a well is symbolic of life, of, you know, liveliness, of water bursting forth. So the heavens, the place of the neshamas, are referred to as Be'er, as a wellspring. The Sheva, why is it called Be'er Sheva? Yirmoz o shvuas Hashem asher tishova ha-nefesh b'tseitza shlotavar al tzadar tzara. Sheva refers to an oath. And the Gemara Nida says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu administers an oath to every neshama before it comes into the world that you should be a tzaddik and not be a rosh. So this is the medrash with which the Sefer HaTanya opens up, you know, that you know, every fetus in utero is made to take a shvua, you know, to eat tzaddik v'al tehi rosh. You should be a tzaddik, you shouldn't be a rosh. So Vayetze Yaakov Yer Sheva, again, just homiletically says the Arachayim, as the neshama comes down from the living source of neshamas, together with the Yetzer Hara, it takes a shvua, sheva, that it's going to be a tzaddik, and it's going to do its utmost to adhere to the rules of the Torah.
The
Sheva Rikiyim, right, maybe refers to the seven heavens as well. He understands that it's from Sheva, maybe based on the Pasuk, because Shal Nishvehu Shenayim, right? In other words, the Pasuk itself says that their Sheva is so-called because the Shvua between Avraham and Abimelech. The Omro Vayelech Harana, it says that in the Pasuk, and he went to Haran, Alderech Omram Zal, Yetzer Hara, Yikonetz Ba'odom, Yitzvetzo Mirechem Imam, Chazal tell us that the Yetzer Hara comes into a person from the very time that he's born. Right? The Yetzer HaTov, he has to wait till Bar Mitzvah. Right? But the Yetzer Hara got a head start. The Yetzer Hara comes into a person from birth. So that's Vayelech Harana, as it comes out, Harana. I think that what he's doing is he's dashing the word Haran as related to Rechem, right? Which doesn't exactly correspond, but it's sort of the same letters. As the neshama comes out and goes to Haran, comes out from the Rechem, so Mimela, it acquires the Yetzer Hara. The Omro, Vayitzka Bamokom. Then what does it say in Pasuk? Vayitzka Bamokom, he davened to the place, Yaakov Avinu. What's the first line of defense we have against the Yetzer Hara? Tfila. Right? In other words, that's Chazal. Don't think that you on your own will be able to conquer the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara will get you. Right? The Yetzer Hara will get you. So are you saying that, you know, it's futile to struggle against the Yetzer Hara? No, you just have to realize that you need God's help in conquering the Yetzer Hara. So your first tool in conquering the Yetzer Hara is by Yitzchak Bamakom. If you have to daven, if you're not going to daven, so then if you're not going to ask Hashem for help in conquering the Yetzer Hara, so you're stuck before you start. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. That very good man broke, if he's got a reference in a minute. So Omro Vayolen Shom Kiva Hashemesh. Then it says again in Pasuk, he lay down there because the sun was setting. That is to say, homiletically, Shasarkli Yisnahid Cain, Adlechto Me'olam Adekishiyar Shimsha. Right? You have to lie down and deal with the state of affairs, i.e., you're going to have to struggle with the Yetzer Hara until the sun sets. What's the sun sets? Until your sun sets. Right? Until you leave this world, you will never. You will never stop struggling with the Yetzer Hara. They tell about one of the Bali Musa, you know, who was on his deathbed, who indicated that, The Yesh Hara was with the person all of his days. So the Talmidim asked him on his deathbed, Rebbe, even now, I mean, you're about to die, you know, you're still fighting with the Yesh Hara. So he said, yes, the Yesh Hara is coming to me and saying, you should scream out Shema Yisrael and Vidui with all your might, so that if you leave the world, the Talmidim will say, ah, what a tzaddik. Right? So even now, the Yesh Hara is wrestling with me, you know? You know, at the Bula Bakraisa, the Gemara says in Brachas that, you know, first has to daven for divine favor, up until the last shovel full of earth that they put into the grave, you know, it ain't over till it's over. The struggle with the Yesh Hara is Vayalen Shom Kivar Hashemesh. You lie there until the sun sets. It's an eternal struggle with the Yesh Hara. The Hu Amram Zal. And that is Chazal say, Masechta Avos, Al Tamin Ba'atzmecha Ad Yom Moschem, right? Don't ever trust in yourself. Don't have self-confidence until the day of your death, right? And you can turn around and admit it, even at the very end. So, Omer Vayikach Me'avei HaMokom. So then what does it say? Vayakvo Vinus, so he takes from the stones of the place. What does that mean? Al Derech Omram, Zal, Omer Yavishim Ben Lakish. This refers to the Gemara in Brachos, right, that Rabbi Reuben mentioned a moment ago. Rish Lakish says, person should always try to incite the Yetzer HaTov to conquer the Yetzer Hara. The Imlav, right? Yasod Batara. If he sees that other means of dealing with the Yetzer Hara don't work, so let him be involved in Torah study. Exiv, Imru Bilvachem. So whom Omer me Avni al Mokum? That's hinted at in the pasuk by Yikach me Avni al Mokum. By Yikach me Avni al Mokum refers to Torah study. Why does the body? Why does it refer to Torah study? Pirush binyano shalom shadivrei Torah. Torah study is the rock upon which one uses to build up the world. Right, the world stands on Torah. So Avni al Mokum, right, is a homiletic reference to the building blocks of the world, i.e. Torah study. You want to deal with the Yetzer Hara, first daven, vayitka v'amokom, and then vayikach me'avne amokom, then take some of the building blocks of existence, Torah study, and use those to fight against the Yetzer Hara. Kam yisyacheis bohem avne amokom, shibohem nisko, v'nirgom Yetzer Hara v'kokosav. Another sense in which he refers to the rocks of the place is that rocks can be used to administer stila. We talk about the punishment of stoning, so stoning usually takes stones in order to stone somebody, right? That's usually how it works, right? So, a person should feel that he needs to stone the Yetzer Hara, right? And how does a person stone the Yetzer Hara? Through Torah study. Who almost now, Torah matzeles the Yetzer Hara, then v'zman she'osikba, then v'zman she'inosikba. As the Grand Sultan says, that the greatness of Torah study is that the Torah that you learn can serve as a shield against the Yetzer Hara, even when you're not actively engaged in the study. And so to speak, you create a reservoir of Torah study that enters into your personality and it's a bulwark against the Yetzer Hara, and even when the person is not actually studying. That's the Grand Sultan says, that the difference between a mitzvah and Torah study. A mitzvah protects against the Yetzer Hara when you're actively doing the mitzvah. Torah study is kind of like an investment, that it's working for you even when you're not actually, engaged in the Lima HaTorah. Right. The Torah is an antidote to the Torah. So all the Rubayot and Mirashot, so in the Baltic says he takes the stone and he puts it under his head. Why? Yechavid al derech masha omer Rishim ben Lakish lo nisko yikot kiyash masha amita shnema al mishkavchem. And that same Gemara in Brachos, Rish Lakish says that if you're not able to defeat the Yetzer Hara immediately, so another potent weapon is Kriya Shema Lamita. Kriya Shema Lamita can drive away the Yetzer Hara as well, right? Again, what's pshat in that? Why Kriya Shema Lamita of all things? I mean, unfortunately, when people go to sleep at night, they relax, they dream all kind of dreams, oftentimes all of the fantasies that they sort of had during the day but might have repressed come out, as they prepare to go to sleep. So Kriya Shema stops those fantasies. Even when the person is beginning to relax and unwind and, maybe allow his mind to roam freely, becomes Kriya Shema Lamita, and again, it fights against the Yetzer under those circumstances. That's why Yosef Mirashotov, right, he takes the rock and puts it under his head as a pillow. the pillow, the spiritual pillow, when you go to sleep, to fight the Yetzer Hara, is Kriyas Shema L'Amitza. So Amar Ishkav B'Mokom Ahu, then the Pope goes on to say, Yaakov lay down in that place. Yechavim HaShafir Rishim Ben Lakish. This refers to the end of that Gemara with Rish Lakish. Lo Nisko Yitzkar Lo Yom HaMitza. If you were not successful in defeating the Yetzer Hara for Torah study, for Kriyas Shema L'Amitza, for all the other things we mentioned, so then, you know, your last weapon in your arsenal, think of your day of death. Think of your mortality. The contemplation of your mortality is a very potent weapon against the Yetzer Hara. Vayishkav b'mokom ahu. He laid down in that place. V'hu amru vayishkav shchiva hayodua b'mokom hayodua. Shchiva over here means the big sleep, not the sleep of tonight. Think of the big sleep b'mokom ahu in that place, in the cave that you've purchased and set aside, you know, for the eternal rest. Think of that, and that will be an antidote against the Yetzer Hara. There are kol ha'aretz, they saw the chokai. Yachar kol ha'tznoim alolu, mutzachu she'iratzeach ha'Yetzer Hara. Right? So after you try all of these approaches, you are assured that the Yetzer Hara is going to be defeated. If you've done all of that, says the Pasuk, you are certainly deserving, if not of Nevuah itself, at least of something that approaches Nevuah, that God will come to you in a dream. Right? In other words, the Pasuk after it says, Vayishkav b'makom ahu, says, Vayachalom, you dream? Vine Hashem Nitzav Olav, Hashem was standing over him, and you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to Yaakov Avinu. That's symbolic, that's representative of the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reveal himself to you again. Perhaps not Derek Nevuah, but you will have a godly spiritual experience if you're able to stave off the Yetzer Hara in these types of ways, right? Mamish, like Chassidus Torah, you know, I mean, it's clearly Ibn Ezra wouldn't touch the pasuk like this, you understand, right? But, you know, and Yom HaChaim as well. It's not claiming that this is pshat by any stretch of the imagination. But the Derech HaMelech, in other words, in a hint, these opening lines of Parshas Vayetze are telling us how to fight the Yetzer Hara, right? Just maybe to add on a thought to the Arachayim, again, beautiful interpretation of these two opening psukim. Okay, so why after here should the psukim be telling us of all of these etzes to fight against the Yetzer Hara? So Yaakov Avinu, in context, in the Chumash, in Pshat, I mean, forget about that for a moment. In Pshat and Chumash, Yaakov Avinu is going into Golus, and he's afraid, and he wants to know how to deal with this thing called Golus. So, in a sense, the pshat and the remez intersect. In other words, the remez, granted, I mean, the remez is clearly not the simple reading of the psukim by any stretch of the imagination, but the remez does tie into the pshat. The same way that Yaakov Avinu is going into a foreign land, is going into Golos, and he's worried whether he'll be able to come back and say, in love and garti v'tayrik mitzvah shomarti. It's not so clear, you know, going into it, that he'll be able to come back and say, I did a good job in Golus, I was, you know, following the mitzvahs in Golus. He has to daven, and he's very, very much afraid as he leaves Eretz Yisrael, that maybe he won't be able to come back. In many ways, that is similar to the neshama going into the Golus of this world, with all of the enticements of the Yetzer Hara. Yaakov had to deal with his Lavan. We have to deal, our neshamas have to deal with our Yetzer Hara. Yaakov Avinu isn't sure he'll be able to come back to Eretz Yisrael again. Our neshamas are not sure that they will be reinstated in Olam Haba after their time spent in this world. There's a tremendous parallelism between the pshat in the pasuk and the remez in the pasuk, and it's really bad that the Arachayim HaKadosh is drawing our attention to. You know, you can read the story of Yaakov as really being symbolic of the story that each and every one of us
experiences, as our neshama comes into this world, right? So, you know, when we read this at first glance, it sounds like, okay, you know, it's a remnant, you know, he basically took the words and he kind of twisted them out of context to give us a very nice idea. But it's deeper than that. I mean, the Arachaim is pointing out that the Pshat itself speaks not just to the experiences of Yaakov, but the Pshat speaks to the experiences of every Jew. And, you know, the same method that Yaakov had at his disposal to try to deal with Lavan. What did Yaakov do? He runs off to the Yeshiva of Eva for 14 years and sits and learns. So the same Eitzah that he has for dealing with Lavan, we also have for dealing with the Eitzah Hara. What does Yaakov do according to Chazal? He doesn't Myrus. He doesn't. Right? What should we do? Say Kriya Shema Lamita. I mean, again, there's a tremendous parallelism between what Yaakov does and what every Jew is called upon to do in fighting the Eitzah Hara. Right? Remez and Pshat, my point is Remez and Pshat are closer sometimes than we might necessarily think off the bat. There's more. That Sulam was so Nefesh Ha'adam. You should know that the Sulam, the ladder over here, represents a person's neshama in the following sense. So Liyosha b'tzeis nefesh me'adam b'shochba lo te'oker b'hechlet negufo shel adam el'chelet mimeno baguf. Even when a person sleeps and his neshama, so to speak, departs his body, right? I mean, that's what we say in Ador Olam. V'yodol avki v'uchi v'eitzi shan v'yo'ira. Right? In other words, I implant, I give over my neshama to the Ribbono Shel Olam when I go to sleep. In other words, he puts it in the big locker up there in Shamayim, you know, while I'm sleeping. But the neshama, even while I sleep, is not totally separated from my physical body. There's a connection that still exists between the guf and the neshama, even when a person goes to sleep, and his neshama temporarily goes up to the heavens. The sulam represents the idea that when a person sleeps, his neshama, so to speak, has a portal between this world and the world of Shamayim. There's a ladder. There's not a disconnect between this world and the world above. A person can be awoken, can be woken, right? When, you know, his body is sleeping, but you give him a good shove, right? And he wakes up. The nefesh adam nifredah v'halkol alatagish v'snah nifagot. Right? If the neshama had departed eternally, you know, or had departed entirely during the night, you can keep the guy all you want, but, you know, he's not going to wake up. Elavadakim utsevitz arzal roshom agi ashamayimo. What's this idea? The Arachaim throws out this idea, it's just kind of paradoxical, but it's a fascinating idea. Why do we say that while the person sleeps, the neshama goes up to heaven? What do we mean by that? So says the Arachaim, the neshama goes up to heaven while a person sleeps, because during a person's sleeping hours, the Yitzhahara doesn't have control over him. So when your Yitzhahara doesn't have control over you, the neshama is able to check back in with Shamayim, which is really the place from which it comes. Again, the neshama was in Shamayim before it was sent down into the person's body. The neshama was not affected by the Yetzer Hara. When a person's sleeping, the Yetzer Hara temporarily does not have at least a full effect on him. Again, you can say maybe he has chalimus in the middle of the night, but I mean, certainly the Yetzer Hara doesn't, it's working on half power, you know, when the person is sleeping. The Yetzer Hara can't get the person to do a lot of things while he's sleeping. So that, in turn, gives the neshama a greater connection to Shamayim, back to its roots. So that's what we mean, says the Arachaim. Well, we say that while a person sleeps, the neshama goes back up to heaven, because the neshama is able to re-experience the kind of spiritual bliss that it had while, you know, before it came into this world and got involved in the Yetzer Hara and everything like that. So the ladder in Yaakov's dream is representative of the neshama itself and its easy access to both Shamayim and Aretz during the sleep of the person. But there's more. The Amro Malachei Elokim Olin V'Yardin Bo. What's the significance of the Malachim going up and down the ladder? So he says, Yirmo Zel Bechinas Maitzim Tovim Asher Yishadol Ha'odam Ha'olam Hazeh. The Malachim in Yaakov's dream refer to the mitzvahs and Maitzim Tovim that a person does while he's alive in this world. The mitzvahs and nice and tovim that a person does in this world, they raise up his neshama, and they create all kinds of orels elyonim, divine lights. The hay mikroim b'divrayim mayim nukvim lohem mikroim malachei elokim the chayin hu b'mishnas chasidim as the mishnas writes in Avos ha'otza mitzvah achas kanlo praklis efod. Whenever you do a mitzvah, you've created a praklis, a heavenly defender. Everyone who does a mitzvah creates a malach, right? So the malachei elokim olim bo, right, is a reference to the fact that when a person works in this world to create mitzvahs and mitzvahs and tells them, he creates malachim, those malachim go up to Shemayim. What's that?
It's
advocates. So you'll ask me, wait a minute, so that's good for olim bo. What about yardim bo? What about the down elevator? You know, what about those malachim that are coming down? It's just a beautiful idea. Uva'alos elu yerdu mayim duchrin ki bisaru tatachtonim yisaru mayim ha'elyonim ashpia oros doroi besod nishmosa. When a person creates mitzvahs and mice and tovim that go up to Shemayim, that triggers in Shemayim brachos of all different sorts that then come down and devolve upon the person. When you create a hitzorerus, an awakening, a spiritual awakening down here, that creates a parallel spiritual awakening up there. So when you send your mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim up, God sends brachos down. That's the name Malachei Elokim, Olim V'Yardim Bo. Right? Why Olim V'Yardim? Because that's very Vedasa. You know, the order is carefully chosen. The malachim go up, the mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim go up, and the bracha comes down, you know, as a result of the mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, which was sent up the ladder. Right? It's a beautiful, beautiful image, you know, which again fits in with the idea that the Arachayim described in the first couple of psukim of the parsha, where the psukim essentially are giving us eitzos as to how to get through life, how to deal with the yetzer hara, and how to eventually experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu's a sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you do all of that, the mitzvahs and mitzvahs and tovim that you do will be sent up the ladder and will send brought down the ladder as a result.
Right,
but Chazal tell us, Gadol HaYish, Gadol HaYetzer, you know, the bigger a person is, the Yetzer Hara grows with you. So the point is not to eliminate the Yetzer Hara. That we're not going to be able to do in this lifetime. Right? The Yetzer Hara is always there. But, and it's good, but you say, okay, so why should I become greater? I'll just get a bigger Yetzer Hara. Because the more the Yetzer Hara pushes against me, the greater I become by pushing back against it, right? In other words, it's like a guy, right? It's like a guy who's you know, working out with weights. You know, as he gradually adds more and more weights that he's able to lift, he'll become a stronger, more powerful person. Right? He welcomes the extra weight that he's able to lift. I mean, when I'm talking to personal spirits over here, but he welcomes, you know, the opportunity to have a bigger barbell and a bigger barbell and a bigger barbell, because he realizes that in terms of building himself up, the greater the challenge, the greater ultimately, you know, his success and his development is going to be. The Yetzer Hara grows along with the person, because the Yetzer Hara is an integral element to enable the person to become what he can become. You know, if you're just going to be naturally good and wonderful and there's no pushback whatsoever, you haven't really accomplished. This is not asking for nisayon. This is built into life. In other words, the greater a person you become, the greater the Yetzer Hara is going to grow along with you. And that's okay, because that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world to function.
It seems so smart. Like you gave the example of the rub and the step.
Right.
But if you have a ceaseless partner, you cannot extinguish the ceasefire.
You're not supposed to extinguish the ceasefire.
You're supposed to fight again.
You're supposed to fight it. You know, that is our task in this world, not to kill the ceasefire. Right? To push back against the ceasefire.
You want to strike the man.
It's a tough struggle. But that's the job. In other words,
and this is Hashem's design, that you have this, ceaseless advocate of negativity, of trespassing, where you're trying to defend yourself.
Exactly.
To do that.
So I've been alone picking up 1 pound, picking thousands of pounds.
Which is making to the birth of I'll tell you a wonderful story I heard from Rabbi Siskel Gesundheit, which made a big roshem on me. So he was I don't think he might telling over the story. I'll admit one name, but I think other than that, he'd be very happy telling over the story. He was a young Rebbe, teaching at YU in the JSS program, the Baal Tshuva program in YU. And he had a colleague, the story doesn't concern Rabbi Ziff himself, Rabbi Ziff had a colleague who was also teaching in that program, who was very fine Talmud Chacham, a very fine teacher. And this colleague once came to the head of the program, Rabbi Moshe Bezdin, Alva Shalom. And he said to Rabbi Bezdin, I'm going out of my mind over here. I come in, I have these great shiurim, I have these wonderful, pieces of Torah to tell the boys, really build them up. And, the boys don't put on tefillin. I mean, I see the religious level of the boys is far below what I kind of anticipate and what I'd like to teach to. I'm ready to teach to here, and they're down here. I'm so frustrated. So Rabbi Bezdin looked at him and said, I don't understand. You're kind of like the doctor who comes and complains. How can I work in this hospital? There's so many sick people here. So the point being, that's your job. That's your job. If they were all coming into class first thing in the morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, ready, Rebbe, I put on Rashi's frilla this morning, I put on Rabbeinu Tam's frilla this morning, I said chicken chatzos last night, Rebbe, let's learn 5 block Gemara, in the next hour or so. So then you're not needed. Right? If they're coming in with that enthusiasm, they don't need you to teach them. They need you to teach them because your job is to raise them up. So it's the same thing with the Yetzer Hara. Why do we have this Yetzer Hara? Because that's our job. Our job is to fight the Yetzer Hara. That's why the Yetzer Hara can never be extinguished. It's with us till the very end. Otherwise we're like the doctor complaining that there's so many sick people in the hospital. But that's why you became a doctor. Your point is to heal the sick people. Our role in life is to fight the Yetzer Hara and to try to squeeze as many mitzvahs and mitzvahs and tells them in Torah study out of a world in which the Yetzer Hara is constantly hitting us and trying to knock us down. That's the point. Right? The beautiful story Rabbi Tzvi Krug has this in one of his books from the Magid of Yerushalayim, Shalosh Shvadron, Zechus Nadek Bevracha, where Rav Shvadron was giving a shiur at a weekly shiur, and there was a certain fellow who was coming, and then, a couple of nights he didn't come. And Shvadron went over to the guy and said, what happened that he weren't able to come these past couple of nights? He said, look, Rabbi, I like the shiur very, very much, but I have a soccer game that meets those particular nights, so I took off these nights from this year to go play soccer, but don't worry, after the season ends, I'll be back, in this year. So the Shadron says to him, soccer, I'm not really sure how that game works exactly. Can you explain the game to me? So I said, okay, if you want, so there's a goal, and there's a guy who stands in front of the goal, and he's the goalie, and the other people try to kick the ball in and everything like that. So Rav Shvadron says, oh, so it doesn't sound like such a big thing, so let me go now and I'll you know, we'll go to the field, I'll kick the ball into the goal. It doesn't sound like it's such a big crunch. So the guy says, no, Rebbe, you don't understand. You know, you're right, there's no crunch to kick the ball in when there's no one in front of the goal. The point is to kick the ball in when the goalie is standing in front of the goal and he can block the goal. So Rosh Hashanah says to him, oh, you just taught yourself a tremendous lesson in Riman HaTorah. To come to a shir when you have nothing else to do and nothing's blocking you, that's not such a big coup. To come to a shir when you have, you know, something pulling you in the other direction, that's a coup. You know, to get the ball in when there's a goalie standing in front of the goal, that's already an accomplishment. That's the Eitz HaHara of this world. It's not fair. We mean it's not fair. That's the game. The game is that it's us against the Eitz HaHara. That's the game. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a game. Otherwise, you wouldn't have life. That's what life is ultimately about. You know, to have this constant struggle with the Eitz HaHara and to try to show that despite the Eitz HaHara guarding the goal, we can still kick the ball into the goal. You know, otherwise, life wouldn't have any purpose or meaning. That's the whole point of life. That's how the person becomes bigger, the Eitz HaHara grows together with him because he needs bigger challenges as he becomes a bigger and bigger person. So let's see a little bit more in the Arachayim. The Omro Bine Hashem Nitzov. After the Malachim Hashem are all of the Yardim Bo, they go up and down. Again, the mitzvahs go up and the bracha comes down. So it says, Bine Hashem Nitzov Allah, Hashem is standing over him. Tirshim Madrega Zo Yalom Nehu Ha'atzma. Right? If you continue working in this fashion to send mitzvahs up and get bracha down, you'll be zochah to nevuah itself. Not just in an indirect kind of fashion through halomos. Right, the Shekhinah itself will appear to him. Well, that's him. The Shavu Chazal Al Yitzos Lohushla Rekod Mehem Mehanevuah V'Kula Luchshar L'Dovid that the Ram writes Novus Shuva. Anyone can become a Novi. Anyone can become a Novi. Yeah, I mean, doesn't happen normally, but anyone has the potential to become a Novi, because ultimately Nevuah is something which can be achieved by a very high level of Avodas Hashem. You know, the Mesilas Yisharim ends off Mesilas Yisharim by saying, you know, if you do everything that I described over here, you'll be zochah to Gilui Eliyahu. Now, I don't think the average guy sitting and learning from Mesilas Yisharim doing a Musa Seder in Yeshiva, you know, anticipates that as he turns the last page over, boom, you know, Eliyahu Novi is going to come and appear to him. But Mesilas Yisharim is reminding us. Mesilas Yisharim was roughly a contemporary of the Arachayim. The Mesilas Yisharim is reminding us that, you know, at the end of the day, we can achieve incredible madregas, you know, things that we associate with the greatest tzaddikim. Those are, in theory, attainable by each and every one of us, you know, by doing the regular things that we are expected to do and just working on them and making them bigger and better and more tzara and more misses and more mice and tzaddikim. You know, we can achieve unbelievable achievements. We shouldn't sell ourselves so short. Yes, I assume what he means is, you know, had you been living in a different door, you would have reached the Madrega of Nevuah, which maybe does not have that means Gilui Eliyahu. I mean, in the Mesilas Yisharim, I think, was assuming that you could reach Gilui Eliyahu directly, you know, in a literal sense. But, you know, you'd be on the Madrega, that if there was Nevuah, you know, Nevuah could devolve upon the person.
The only one said that there were seven levels there in the book. Mm-hmm. He only got to the third or fourth. Even though he read the book, and he read it, and he incorporated it, but to really bring it in 100% each level into your life, you're thinking like,
he only made it halfway up the ladder. And if that's true for the Vilna Gaon, Allah has the Kaaba certainly for us. I wanted to come back to a point that Charlie had made before. If you take a look at on page Kuf Nun, so again, God appears to Yaakov, and Pasuk Tetzayin. Vayikach Yaakov Mishnato. Yaakov wakes up, right, and he's very moved by the dream which he had. And then Pasuk Kuf, Vayidar Yaakov Neder Leimar. He swears. He makes an oath, a vow. And he said, if God will be with me, if you will guard me on this way in which I walk, if you will give me bread to eat, and you know, close b'shavi b'shalom v'tovi, and I will then, if I will come back in peace to the house of my father, v'hoyo Hashem li le'elokim, and then God will, you know, then Hashem will be a God to me. Right? So comments the Arachayim, what do you mean, and Hashem will be my God? And up to now, he wasn't, right? So he quotes Rashi. He doesn't like Rashi's pshat. And 4 lines from the bottom, he says the following pshat. Here's the Arachayim's own pshat. What does it mean? V'hoyo Hashem li le'elokim. V'nochon hu shnizkavei lomar, she's yached elov shem Hashem le'elokim, Kishem shnis yached al avotov, Eloke Avram, Eloke Yitzchok, Gam Ye Omer Olov, Eloke Yaakov. What Yaakov was davening for here, for over here, what he was, you know, asking for in this nether was the psalm. The fact that God's going to protect me, get God the psalm is that. I'm asking for something else. I'm asking for Hoya Hashem, Lele Elokim. I want Hashem to be called Eloke Yaakov. I want to have that special kind of relationship with God that my forefathers, Avraham and Yitzchak, were zochet to have. Not just simply that God will watch over me, because again, of course I know God is going to watch over me. I want something deeper than that. I want to be called I want God to be called Eloke Yaakov, and not just because I want to make it into Shemoneh Esrei, or I'm looking for the gaiva involved in Eloke Yaakov, but I would like to be able to be zochet to be one of the pillars of the Jewish nation, one of the avos, not just in a biological sense, but we know that Avraham and Yitzchak each imprinted their special midah on the Jewish people. I would like to be zocha, to be, you know, to be able to do that as well. So who Omro li le'elokim? Right? Yaakov Avinu doesn't say Hashem should watch me, or that Hashem should be God. V'hoyo Hashem li le'elokim. Hashem should be for me, God. Da'ayinu Eloke Yaakov. I want my unique way of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my midah of Tiferes, my midah of Emes, to be a midah which becomes enshrined in the Tziros, which becomes something which is passed on to Klal Yisrael in the future. That's what I'm asking for. Now, that was not founded to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu is asking for something big over here. This is not just, I'd like you to protect me, I'd like you to watch over me, I'd like you to give me something to eat. No, I want this, I'm asking big. I want, to be, someone who's going to have this unique relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the way in which I relate to God is going to be a legacy for the future generations. The Dover Gadol Diber Yaakov was there. Yaakov was asking for a big deal over here. So was this fulfilled? So says the Achan, yes. We find it in Chumash. Besides the fact that it says, Eloke Yaakov in many places, but more than that. The Timsa Shekein Hoya. The Ksiv Aikwelo Kael Eloke Yisrael. Right? The Gemara Megillah, we had in the Gemara Shir, points to this pasuk later on in the next parasha, Parashas Vayishlach, where Vayikra Lokel Elokei Yisrael, where God is called Elokei Yisrael, the God of Yisrael. Who's Yisrael? Yisrael is Yaakov. There's an identification set up between Yaakov and the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Gemara Megillah goes further than that. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Yaakov Kael. Right, the Yaakov Avinu is called God, and there's such an identification between God and Yaakov that Yaakov himself is called Kael. I mean, you get it exactly, whatever that means exactly, clearly it doesn't mean that Yaakov becomes a god or a deity in the simple sense of the term. But it means that Yaakov achieves a certain incredible madrega, which is what he asked for. The Ahakak Shilei Nidrash, another Alasso to Evan Azos. And that's when Yaakov fulfills his nether. But he doesn't fulfill his nether until Parshas Vayishlach, when he comes back to Beit Bel, sets up the rock as a matseva, right, and pours oil on the top of it. That's only after God becomes Elokei Yisrael. So Yaakov is asking for a big deal over here. That's the point the Arachayim is making. And, it helps us realize Yaakov had incredible trust in God. It wasn't as if he was making bargains with the Ribbono Shel Olam, you watch me,
I'll make this a place of sacrifice and you know, homage to you, the Rebbe Shalom. No. Yaakov Avinu was saying, you've promised me big things already, Rebbe Shalom. I want to go for broke. I want to be part of this chain of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And if you do that, because again, it's not bargaining, but then I will be able to really consecrate this place as being a place of worship for Rebbe Shalom, because I'm not just going to be Yaakov, you know, old man Yaakov. I'm going to be Yaakov Avinu. I'm going to be one of the others. I'm going to be someone who can be called, you know, about whom it can be said, Elokei Yisrael, Elokei Yaakov, and that's deserving of a special kind of celebration when I come back. Right? I think, maybe, you know, it kind of addresses that point. It's not just a proper neder that he's making, but it's really, he's focusing on becoming something that's very, very great indeed. Right. I don't think so. I think he's asking for success in relating to Hashem in this way. Now again, everybody needs divine assistance in conquering the Yetzer Hara. So he needs God's assistance in doing that. Right? So he doesn't want to eliminate the Yetzer Hara, but he wants to be successful in his struggle against the Yetzer Hara. You know, he wants to be able to get the ball and the goal. He doesn't want to take the goalie away. He wants to get the ball and the goal, despite the fact that the goalie is guarding the goal. Right? So that's what he's davening to the Rebbe Shalom for, you know, to make me so successful in that I can manage to take my place alongside my father and my grandfather, the people who are molding the Jewish people itself, you know, in that way. There's a very interesting, again, I'll just say it outside because we're a little pressed for time, but a very interesting insight just about Derech HaPshat, which the Arach Chaim comments on, which, again, you know, we read the story every year, but the Arach Chaim really brings out a somewhat obvious element of the story, which I think we oftentimes miss when we go through the story, right? So Yaakov Avinu goes to Lavan, and, you know, famously works for Rachel for 7 years, and then boom, you know, he gets the sister switched on him, you know, he marries Rachel, or whom he thinks is Rachel, and he wakes up in the morning, v'hinehi Leah, and behold it's Leah, and he marches to Laban and says, you know, you tricked me. It's maybe a delicate question, but it's a very simple question, it's almost like a child's kasha. How did he get fooled? I mean, so you tell me under the chuppah, you know, so she had a chassidus shazel. Okay. You know, so he had no idea, you know, who was standing there under the chuppah. But, you know, after the chuppah, I mean, again, she's putting it delicately. You know, they go home together, they spend the night together. He woke up in the morning, v'hinehi Leah, and that's when he first realized that it's Leah. So then Chazal tell us about, you know, the simanim and okay, it's good, but, you know, he was there for 7 years. After 7 years, and going to, you know, going to bed with the woman, he couldn't tell whether it was Rachel or Leah. I mean, it's a plea. You know, he woke up in the morning, and he made, oh, ooh, you know, it's a plea of Tuma. I just understand the story. So I tell him something interesting. I think it's almost like Tosh the Chat, but it's a tremendous Musa Hamka. Yaakov was ecstatic. And the way in which he conducted himself, it's like you said, oh, the way in which he conducted himself in marital relations was so salua. He managed to know. You know, he didn't work himself up. He went in, he did what he had to do, he separated, and it was so, you know, almost instantaneous that he didn't have the opportunity to even, you know, realize who it was that he was together with. Right? In a sense, it's almost like a pashas and a other, because otherwise the story is just very, very hard to understand. But, you know, reading, it's another example where reading between the lines of the Chumash, one comes away with a perspective on the Avos, which is not made explicit in the Chumash itself, but it's a little bit of a window into the tremendous sneers of Yaakov Avinu, the way he conducted himself, even in marital relations. And again, here's Rachel Imenu,
whom he's been waiting for 7 years, I mean, again, from his perspective, it's Rachel Rimeinu, he's been waiting for her for 7 years, and he's so tsonua in his interaction with her that he doesn't even realize whom it is exactly. Lavan says, this is Rachel. He says, okay, it's Rachel. One can only fathom the story if one imagines the tremendous act of fear on the part of Yaakov Avinu, where he managed, you know, barely knew. That's even true according to Chazal's interpretation with the Simonim and all that. Okay, good Simonim, you know, but so. He didn't realize whom the woman was that he was together with. I mean, hard to imagine. Unless, again, there were certain Simonim set up, you know, kind of pro forma, he went from the Simonim, everything checked out, that was it. You know, he was not overcome by lust in the, you know, the conventional sense of the term, even as this was the woman that he had waited for 7 years for, you know, in order to be able to marry her. And I'm not sure what to take away from that on a practical level. I mean, again, this is something for Tzaddikim of the Madrega of Yaakov Avinu, but it's a tremendous insight into a more delicate, you know, part of the Midot that Yaakov Avinu exhibited.
There's a great deal of
negativity here, as he fooled his father. Yeah. No, but the Midrashim talk about that. The Midrashim say, you know, yeah, sir, you're right, you know, I mean, you fooled your father, and you get fooled in this way as well. So, I don't want to get into that aspect of things. I'm just saying from just a very simple level, good. How is it possible that it was fooled? I mean, well, once they were together, the bedroom together, it's hard to imagine. So again, it's a tremendous insight into the spirit of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, Beth Hashem, we'll pick up next time, and have a good Shabbos.